Very remarkable artist, totally subtle and barbaric, gives proof of an unmistakable personality. Barbaric, she forcefully performed to Schubert's Marche Militaire. During the choice morsel of feu follet, she was subtle.
Paris's first international festival of dance competition at the Bal Bullier in May 1929.
Looking delicate as periwinkles, the daughter of a celebrated writer made one dream of Ireland with her lilting chant, modulated with a voice in which lingered an Italian accent.
Little dares, and could you just please, monsieur?
What the Irish girl?
Irish girl, no!
Though French critic Charles Saint-Cyr singled Lucia Joyce out as the only contestant with the makings of a professional dancer, much to the chagrin of all present, the Irish girl placed runner-up to a French dancer.
The Irish girl.
You reckon more
day. We want the Irish girl.
21-year-old modern dancer Lucia Joyce's appetite was whetted for more and committed to training for the second international dance festival with Hungarian juror Madika. However, little did Lucia know that despite her now undisputed promise, this moment, thankfully written down for posterity, would be the apex of her career. Witnesses included James Joyce and his invitees, Samuel Beckett, who kept Berenice Abbott's now iconic photo of Lucia in her magical self-designed silver fish costume for the rest of his life, and three more friends of W.B. Yeats, Belinda Duncan, who makes an appearance in Finnegan's wake, her husband Alan, former secretary to W.B. Yeats, and Tom McGreevy. McGreevy, a poet and shrewd critic who would later become director of the National Gallery of Ireland, had drawn Mr. Yeats's attention to Lucia's extraordinary dancing prowess a year earlier, as Yeats was now on the prowl for dancing talent to perform his plays for dancers at the Abbey Theatre's new Abbey Theatre Ballets, co-founded with Ninette de Valois 2 years previously to be a ballet russe for Ireland.
Lucia, it means light, like Paris, the city of light.
It's high time to cast new light on much maligned artist Lucia Joyce and insert her back into the pantheon of lost 20th century modern dance history in Ireland, where she belongs. Here's her biographer, Carol Lieb-Schloss, author of groundbreaking book Lucia Joyce, To Dance in the Wake.
The evidence was quite overwhelming. She was a gymnast, she was a dancer, she was planning to be a teacher, and everyone who knew her knew the brilliance of her dancing. They called her subtle and barbaric, and someone with great talent.
Salvaging this suppressed cultural history, fabulous figures have reemerged from the shadows. From 1920s Abbey Theatre Ballet's original Doreen Cuthbert to 1940s Irish-German modern dance pioneer Erina Brady, cutting a dash on Grafton Street in her black beret and leopard skin coat. All unheard of in Ireland's burgeoning contemporary dance community until recently. And what a welcome surprise to find Lucia Joyce at the heart of this unfolding her story, thanks to a reference in a letter from W.B. Yeats to his wife, George.
Rapallo, Italy. February 27th, 1928. Tom has written, praising above all other public dancers, James Joyce's daughter. We may use her someday. Yours affectionately, W.B. Yeats.
The messenger is the same Tom McGreevy who we have just seen keeping tabs on Lucia's progress a year later at the Bal Bullier. No doubt Yeats is alluding to the prospect of using the Paris-trained Lucia Joyce in his plays for dancers at Dublin's Abbey Theatre.
I went out to the hazel wood because a fire was in my head. And cut and peeled a hazel wand and hooked a berry to a thread. And when white moths were on the wing and moth-like stars were flickering out, I dropped the berry in a stream and caught a little silver trout.
Indeed, mightn't Lucia's self-designed, glimmering 1929 silver fish costume call up to the eyes Yeats's own transformative little silver trout of the Song of Wandering Aengus, picked out for special mention by the 1923 Nobel Prize Committee when awarding him his Nobel Prize for Literature. We liked especially your little silver trout, they said.
When I had laid it on the floor, I went to blow the fire aflame. Fire. But something rustled on the floor, and someone called me by my name. It had become a glimmering girl, with apple blossom in her hair, who called me by my name and ran, and faded through the brightening air.
Multilingual Lucia, who was born to Nora Barnacle and James Joyce in Trieste in 1907, spent her formative years speaking a Triestine dialect of Italian, Swiss German during World War I in Switzerland, French when they moved to Paris in 1920, and of course, English.
She had an adorable accent when speaking English.
No wonder Lucia was ultimately more at home in body language. Carol Liebschloss again.
There were three components to Lucia's interest in dance. The first began when she was a child. She became a student of Raymond Duncan and also a student of Elizabeth Duncan, the brother and sister of Isadora. Their emphasis in dance was an extension of gymnastics and of health. So Lucia, I think we could say, began as a quick, interested, curious child who took quickly to something and someone saw her aptitude for it. Later, she was introduced to a dancer named Margaret Morris. Morris was not only a performer, but was also a teacher. And she was really Lucia's greatest gateway to dance as an opening out into life. Margaret Morris performed, and she also set up various kinds of schools to help women enjoy their bodies, to love to move, to get out of the rigidity of Victorian corsets. And Morris remembered Lucia in her memoirs and, in fact, had asked her to become a Margaret Morris teacher.
I had two teachers with me in Paris, and both were fully employed. One English girl, the other Irish, the daughter of the writer James Joyce.
It was Margaret Morris, whose painter husband was a friend of James Joyce, that introduced Lucia to her first dance group, Les Six de Rhythme et Couleur, named after avant-garde French music group Les Six, as well as running their own school and journal and advocating self-sufficiency for women, this idealistic company,
run by Scottish Lois Hutton and French Hélène Vanel, made a splash in publications like Vogue and Tatler, who described them as
8 or 10 girls, perhaps 16 and over, who retreat for many months to a remote area of Alp Maritime to consecrate themselves to dance. In bare feet and tunics, wholeheartedly and unselfconsciously bringing in a new age.
After 1926 performances in their hideaway 40-seater theatre tucked away in the hills between Juan-les-Pins and Saint-Paul in the south of France, Lucia's first Parisian performances with these utopians took place at the Théâtre des Champs-Élysées and the Théâtre du Vieux Colombier in 1927. The company toured to Brussels and even to Trieste, city of Lucia's birth, as part of an Italian tour. Lucia was soon causing a stir, for example, in the Paris Times of March 14, 1928.
Lucia Joyce is her father's daughter. She has James Joyce's enthusiasm, energy, and a not yet determined amount of his genius. She dances all day long, if not with Les Six de Rhythme et Couleur, studying under Lois Hutton and Hélène Vanel, then by herself, she never tires.
As well as dancing, Lucia created her own costumes, one of which resembled a walking gramophone.
When she is not dancing, she is planning costumes, working out colour schemes, designing colour effects. When she reaches her full capacity for rhythmic dancing, James Joyce may yet be known as his daughter's father.
Immersed in the vortex of the Parisian avant-garde, Lucia was surrounded by people like George Antheil, notorious bad boy of American music, who introduced the Joyces to the iconoclastic and influential work of the Ballet Suédois, rival to the Ballet Russe. No wonder W.B. Yeats expressed an interest in plugging Lucia Joyce into his Abbey Theatre Ballet project. Composer and director of the new Museum of Literature of Ireland, Simon O'Connor, elaborates.
Antheil, he was an American composer. He was born in 1900. So he arrived in Paris in, I think it was around 1923. Stravinsky encouraged him to move to Paris. Paris was like the kind of, I suppose, like the epicenter of the entire avant-garde at the time. He kind of very cleverly rented a room upstairs in Shakespeare and Company and became really close friends with Sylvia Beach. So he was immediately, I think, within that scene. The way he was approaching the piano was very different. So he was treating the piano nearly primarily as a percussion instrument. And then when he gets to his, what I feel is his masterpiece, and probably many others do too, the Ballet Mécanique, that's where he starts really messing around with instrumentation. So it's written for, you know, originally, I think there's an orchestration for 16 pianolas, a bunch of xylophones, engines, loudspeakers, airplane propellers, electric bells, all of this kind of stuff. But it's a fantastic percussive piece of music. It owes a debt to Stravinsky as well in terms of the orchestration and just the kind of sonorities that come out of the orchestration. But for that avant-garde scene in Paris at the time, it's like pure catnip. I mean, Joyce was in attendance at that Ballet Suédois event, that opening season event in 1924. Joyce was there, Man Ray was there.
For one brief moment of electric synergy, Joyce and Antheil were even collaborating on a possible opera version of the Cyclops episode of Ulysses.
Around the time of Ballet Mécanique, Antheil was really interested in setting the Cyclops episode of Ulysses to music. So he was in conversation with Joyce about that. You know, when he talks about the orchestration for his planned orchestration for the Cyclops episode, he's talking about using like large chunks of steel as percussion instruments. So he's kind of getting, he's pushing it into other areas in kind of typical brazen fashion. He describes it as it's going to be the destruction of music. There's going to be enormous amplified, gigantic phonographs. There'll be new musical machines. He kind of has a dig at Stravinsky. He says it's going to be the rite of spring of the future, and all composers to follow will have a hard time scrambling over it. So that's a really Joycean thing as well when you think about it in the context of Finnegan's Wake. The Cyclops opera doesn't materialise. There's a few sketches that exist of it, kind of just literally a few scraps of sketches. Fighting the Waves itself, then, is a really, really interesting piece of music. It's actually, it would be after, I think, after Ballet Mécanique, I think it's probably the next really good, like, really interesting, solid piece of work. You know, you'd hope, actually, kind of influential piece of work that Antai does. That's for movement as well. So his particular approach to music, that really percussive, polyrhythmic approach, is really, really suited and probably really attractive to dancers. The work that he did was really, for Fighting the Waves, I think was really favourably received. Yeats himself said that he was really taken by it. He thought that the kind of totality of it reflected a kind of a lost ritual space.
And there was young and impressionable Lucia Joyce in the middle of this crazy artistic maelstrom.
Reviewers talk about that, you know, as him being kind of like physically provocative when he mentions that thing about the revolver on the piano. You know, like, I mean, it's theatre, like, that's what it is. The audience get physically involved. People are throwing chairs around, you know, in the premiere of Ballet Mécanique in the Theatre Champs-Élysées, at the point in the piece, in that orchestration of the piece, when one of the engines kicks in and the propeller starts going, like, there's a guy apparently at the front, takes out an umbrella and stands up to shield himself from the wind, and then lots of other people start copying him. So, and then people are shouting at them to sit down. So, you know, it's what a scene to be in, you know. And you know, I don't have a mention of Lucia at that concert, but you know, she must certainly have. I mean, everybody must have heard about that.
Transient moments of Parisian synchronicity, Mr. and Mrs. Antheil were invited to James Joyce's February 2nd, 1928 birthday party, recalled here by Helen Nutting.
Lucia, Mrs. Antheil, and Kitten sat on the sofa.
Lucia and her fellow dancer, Kitten Neal, had just danced a toy soldier duet in Jean Renoir's film The Little Match Girl. Hélène Vanel, co-founder of Les Six de Rhythme et Couleur, recalls Lucia during rehearsals in the foyer of the Théâtre du Vieux Colombier.
There I saw Lucia absolutely joyous. It was a rare thing, for everything with her was serious. I should like to recapture the picture of Lucia who threw herself without restraint through the empty side of the great chamber. It was evident that dance was for her a guarantee of equilibrium and of energy. That is, she was perhaps never fully conscious of it, but she felt that her efforts were salutary. They gave her a taste of life and a beautiful way to express her dreams with all of her being, both body and soul.
Full of promise, Lucia was
tall, slender, remarkably graceful, with brown bobbed hair, blue eyes, and very clear skin.
And she was popular, as recalled by one of her many friends, Adele Fernandez.
Oh, I was very friendly with Lucia, who I remember as joyous, charming, pretty, and full of kindness.
Can't you just imagine this joyous, charming Lucia at her famous father's 1928 birthday party, hanging out on the sofa beside her blonde American dancing colleague, Kitten Neal, the two of them radiating Rudolf von Laban-type idealism.
The fate of our race is awakening to dance. We dancers are pioneers of a new dawn of art.
Chatting in the background with Mrs. Antheil, while skeptical talk of Yeatsian table tapping and a long story of messages received from the spirits took center stage, as recalled by Adrienne Monnier.
James Joyce declared, "Le seul esprit he believes in is l'esprit de l'escalier," as he danced with Robert McGallman quietly in the back parlour, improvising rhythmic movements to Antaï, playing old English music as requested of him.
Look at Joyce. He's totally Greek. He's a satyr on a Greek vase. We had champagne, dancing and singing, and everything was gay. Stiffness melted.
Joyce imitated Lucia's dancing a la Raymond Duncan.
Party guest George Antheil was on the brink of composing the score for Yeats's February 1929 play for dancers, Fighting the Waves, starring Ninette de Valois, back in Dublin's Abbey Theatre Ballets. Alas, there is no written record of the party banter between George, Lucia and Kitten, but might it be reasonable to read between the accounts we have, all focused on her father's antics and overlooking Lucia's budding talent in their midst.
I'm the artist around here. C'est moi qui est l'artiste.
Lucia's gift was for body movement, not for conversation. And she lived among people who appreciated the gift for conversation. So it's easy to imagine that she did feel overshadowed. She spoke a different language. And I would say that as Joyce scholars in the past, we have not known how to read that language. And that has partly explained our ignorance and our own overlooking Lucia's talent.
What if, in the shadows of that birthday party, Lucia was cooking up a plan to get involved in the exciting new Irish project Antheil was involved in at the Abbey Theatre Ballets? What if? Why not?
Ready? And let me stretch your front.
After the 1929 Balboulier competition, Lucia valiantly signed up for exigent training in Lubov Ergova's Ballet Russe feeder school, the same school ill-fated Zelda Fitzgerald attended 2 years previously and wrote about in her book, Save Me the Waltz. This undertaking seems less crazy than it has been depicted if Lucia was paying heed to Yeats's wish for the Abbey Theatre Ballet to be a Ballet Russe for Ireland and emulating Ninette de Valois' own Ballet Russe pedigree. The Irish-born dancing sensation performed with the legendary company from 1923 to 1927, just before the Abbey Theatre project.
We'll never know what happened because Lucia was cut off. We know that she intended to become a teacher because she left us a calling card, a business card that announced her studio.
Kathleen Neal, Lucia Joyce, physical training, private lessons. Phone for particulars, 2 to 3 p.m. Segur 9520.
When Joyce decided to leave Paris and shut up his flat, he cut off all of Lucia's abilities to have her own students. So we're left with a big question. We're also left with other impressions.
Why can't you be more like Kitten Neal? She has lots of boyfriends. Why don't you stop dancing if it makes you so nervous?
According to Giorgio's first wife, the marvellously wealthy Helen Fleischmann, who was more than a decade his senior.
Giving up dancing was all Nora's idea. Nora nagged and bullied until she got Lucia to give it up.
My mother doesn't approve of me.
I find it almost impossible to understand Nora's attitude, but we can observe that it existed from the very beginning. There was someone to act as a surrogate mother for Lucia when she was in Italy. And once she got to Paris, she sought out other people who could encourage her in a way that Nora apparently didn't. So I think we see the Joyce family in a cultural divide, a generational divide, and a gender divide. And Joyce himself said that Lucia and Nora just couldn't get on. He said that's the problem and the whole problem.
Perplexingly, while encouraging her towards a career in illustration of his own poetry, James Joyce, however, did admit.
Yes, yes, she was born to dance.
Lucia was a flapper. She was part of the avant-garde. She went around with surrealists in Paris. She hung out with Samuel Beckett, with Alexander Calder, with people who were interested in innovation in the way, not just in art, but in lifestyle. And Nora wasn't into that. So we have a generational divide, and it took Joyce a lifetime to really try and catch up with his own daughter. She took Joyce out into Paris in a way that Joyce would never have gone by himself. I mean, Joyce is writing about the Greeks, and Lucia is dressing up as a Greek with Raymond Duncan, pretending to be a figure on a Greek vase, acting out a kind of countercultural life that we can only try to imagine in retrospect. She took him places, and she's to be recognized for what she added to his life. The Swedish Ballet did have a dance that was taken on top of the body of a sleeping giant. I mean, that's the figure, the same figure as Finnegan asleep under Dublin. So we can see Joyce responding to things he would not have known about had his daughter not had her particular interests.
Here is Dominique Gillet-Maroget, Lucia's Parisian friend since 1931, whose father, the critic Louis Gillet, wrote the preface for Chaucer's ABC with latrines by Lucia at the request of his friend James Joyce.
Dance was her life. Why did Joyce doubt Lucia? He knew it was pointless to resist the hard artistic struggle that he himself had to undergo in his own work. And wasn't it his role as a father to encourage her? Because that was to sabotage her happiness, a happiness she had gotten a taste of, the exaltation of movement in space, the blossoming of her body, the direct expression of her feelings, with the public response. Just within reach, this goal was scuppered, a life's ambition cut mid-flight. This was to plunge her into the dark forces of dispersal and disintegration. How did Joyce not realize this?
Meanwhile in Dublin, failing to find a replacement for Ninette de Valois, who left to found Vic Wells Ballet, the Royal Ballet's forerunner, Yeats's visionary Abbey Theatre Ballet project came to an end in 1933. In 1935, James Joyce sent a signed edition of his Poems Penny Each to W.B. Yeats.
Dear Yeats, please accept a little book I am sending you, also signed, a fragment of a book I am writing, published in Holland not long ago. The cover design is by my daughter. Sincerely yours, James Joyce.
Surely Yeats must have wondered what happened to Joyce's daughter's promising modern dance career. Might Lucia have been able to pick up the reins from Ninette de Valois, or at least contribute to his Abbey Theatre ballets? In the absence of any written records, we can only speculate.
If we pay attention to those who knew her, then we see somebody who had extraordinary gifts, and we're not quite sure why the Joyces didn't pay attention to them.
Irish painter Stella Steen, another Parisian friend of Lucia's, recalled.
I thought Lucia's upbringing seemed to be strange and less free than any of the young girls in Ireland. I remember she had to be home by 9 p.m. It seems surprisingly short-sighted to have advised her to give up dancing, which had been her main interest for about 5 years. He was undoubtedly devoted to Lucia. I'm sure he loved her more than any other human being and wanted nothing but her happiness. But he had no interest in the visual arts. I too had seen Lucia's dancing, and it might have been good to have suggested taking other directions in dancing. But to abruptly take her off one form of art and direct her to an equally superficial aspect of the visual arts was no solution.
She expressed anger, she expressed rage, she expressed the difficulty of being overlooked in light of her father's increasing fame. I used to call that the giant overshadow, just a metaphor for the fact that everyone paid attention to everyone else except her. She was the least important cultural term.
No doctors, no sanatorium, no blood examination.
Dilly didn't have a chance. Me neither. I didn't have a chance.
There was not much the matter with the girl. And whatever it was, she would soon get over it.
No one knew what was wrong with Lucia. That's very clear. I went to the Library of the History of Medicine, retrieved every book of Lucia's doctors, and looked at their diagnostic categories.
Not lunatic, but decidedly neurotic.
Forel could not make a diagnosis or sign his name to a definitive statement about her after 7 months.
Hebephrenia?
Demons precoce? Schizophrenia.
They didn't know what they were doing. And she was a very theatrical person. Was she ill? I think she was depressed.
Dear Miss Weaver, I'm afraid I cannot keep by you in London. I certainly must appear to you like the most disgusting creature that ever walked on this earth. One of the doctors I was in contact with said I really had a great wish to live and an immense love of life. He was right. And perhaps you know somebody who will explain this to you quite carefully. With kindest regards, yours sincerely, Lucia Joyce.
James Joyce himself explained.
Her case is cyclothymia, dating from the age of 7 and a half. She is about 33, speaks French fluently. Her character is gay, sweet, and ironic. But she has bursts of anger over nothing when she is confined to a straitjacket.
I didn't have a chance. I was embarrassing.
I think she was perhaps even traumatized by some of the endings of relationships with men. There was not only Samuel Beckett, but also Sandy Calder.
We were in love, but I think he went away. Anyway, he never wrote to me, and I don't know what became of him.
Albert Hubble.
She had a perceptible Irish accent, and her solemn, almost melancholy expression could suddenly break up into a monkeyish grin. She affected a certain insouciance, but she seemed quite vulnerable. She had a way of standing quite close to you and, for a moment, confiding her whole self to your care. I felt then that I could really fall in love with Lucia. I ended the relationship, not by a clean break, but more reprehensibly by just sliding out of her life. For years after I left Paris, the thought and memory of Lucia kept coming back to me, sometimes in dreams. When I heard what was happening to her, I couldn't stand it, whether from guilt or remorse or dread. I stopped inquiring about her.
Alex Ponasofsky, all men who played with her but didn't offer her a serious relationship. And she saw her failure in light of Giorgio's success with Helen Fleischman. She was diagnosed as troubled, and she was given labels, but the most often response of her doctors was that they could not give a definitive diagnosis. Even Jung said the same thing about her. A very unique case. And he saw her in relationship to her father. I think he used the metaphor that Joyce was diving and Lucia was falling.
And he also saw Ulysses as a pathology.
He did. He was in over his head.
Giorgio first brought his talented sister to a Maison de Santé against her will after she threw a chair at Nora in 1932. Lucia was upset because her ex-boyfriend Samuel Beckett, who had rejected her cruelly, was being invited to her father's 50th birthday party. Unfortunately for her, a trained dancer, she expressed this rage physically.
I need to get my head operated on because I'm always on autodestruct.
I think as soon as a young woman entered any kind of mental asylum, that her identity was stigmatized. So when Giorgio first took her and placed her involuntarily in an institution, it's not simply that other people would have looked at her askance, but that her own self-image would have been damaged. So I think Lucia was aware of the effect of slapping her into these institutions and the, to us, barbaric treatment that she got there.
My tongue should be cut out as I never stop talking.
Lucia would be subjected to a variety of medieval-style treatments, from being injected with bovine serum to being injected with seawater, and of course, solitary confinement, and being put in a straitjacket whenever she got a bit too physical. Not to mention the inevitable drugs and tranquilizers.
I want to go to Tel Aviv.
Why Tel Aviv?
To escape death.
On March 23rd, 1980, Dominique Gillet-Maroget went to visit Lucia for the last time in St. Andrew's Asylum, Northampton, accompanied by Lucia's guardian, Jane Lidderdale.
As we were about to part, next to the lift, she asked me not to talk about her, saying she wasn't worth it.
Harriet Shaw Weaver had transferred Lucia from the asylum in France to Northampton in 1951, 1 month before her mother, who hadn't visited Lucia since 1939, died in Zurich. In stark contrast, right up until his 1941 death, James Joyce did everything in his power to get Lucia out of occupied France to be with the family in neutral Zurich. Here is celebrated Joycean, Senator David Norris.
Joyce absolutely loved Lucia without condition. There's a letter of 1936 where he says, "I know I'm being criticized by all my friends for wasting that precious metal money on trying to find a cure for the most elusive disease known to man and unknown to medicine. But if you were where she is and felt as she must, you would at least experience some hope if you knew that you are neither abandoned nor forgotten." That is a letter of passionate parental love. So whatever people say about Joyce, there's no questioning his devotion and his loyalty to his daughter.
Giorgio only visited his sister once in Northampton, on his way back from the first International Joyce Symposium in Dublin in 1967, organised by Fritz Zehn. Mr. Zehn, founder of the Zurich James Joyce Foundation, had written to Lucia about the proceedings and received this lovely handwritten reply.
"Dear Mr. Zehn, I'm glad to hear of the first International James Joyce Symposium and that it is being held in Dublin. I send my best wishes for the success and to all those attending it. Saluti cordiali. And lots of love. Lucia Joyce, 14th of June, 1967.
Can't you imagine Giorgio at that conference being asked, how is his sister, Lucia? What a lovely letter they received from her. And him having to admit that he hadn't laid eyes on her in decades. Or maybe not admitting it.
But one thing we can notice is the animosity between brother and sister. I don't know how to assign a cause to that, but the animosity then turned to a radical kind of neglect. And then, of course, Harriet Weaver was like a saint. She stepped in as the final surrogate mother and made sure that Lucia was as well cared for as possible, given the fact that she had been institutionalized for so long that she didn't know how to live in any other circumstance.
After her 1980 visit, Dominique Maroget wrote Last Meeting with Lucia.
In this medicated environment, any creative expression represents danger. Here, you kill time. You don't live. Any attempt to relieve the favorable numbness that maintains the equilibrium of the patients and of the institution is to be avoided at all costs. All spirit of creativity is completely banned.
I don't regard Lucia as a total failure. I regard her as someone who got stuck in an institution where she was when the Nazis invaded Paris. Had that historical circumstance not happened, we might have gotten her out of an institution. She might have had a different fate. But that was, in fact, what she faced. And by the time she was found in the south of France, she'd lived in an institution so long that it was hard to think of how to reintegrate her into a fuller life. But I prefer to remember her as her friends and colleagues remembered her, as someone who was lively, vibrant, off the wall, creative, daring, and probably a bit naughty.
I was too naughty.
But I'm losing them that's here and all I loathe, lonely in me loneliness, for all their faults. I am passing out. Oh, bitter ending. I'll slip away before they're up. They never see, nor know, nor miss me. And it's old and old, it's sad and old, it's sad and weary I go back to you. My cold father, my cold mad father, my cold mad fiery father. Till the near sight of the mere size of him, the moils and moils of it mononing, makes me sea silt salt sick and I rush my only into your arms. I see them rising. Save me from those terrible throngs. Two more. One, two Mormons more. So, Ave Laval. So soft this morning, ours. Yes. Carry me along, Taddy, like you done through the toy fair. If I seen him bearing down on me now under white spread wings like he'd come from archangels, I sink, I die down over his feet, humbly, dumbly, only to wash up. Yes, Tid, there's where.
Alwyn Fuere in River Run, her rendition of Finnegan's Wake, inspired by Lucia Joyce.
She's dissolving into the ocean and the ocean becomes arms, these great arms that are going to enfold her, and they're male arms as well, you know, kind of lover's arms, but also possibly father's arms. But I think it was really the kind of linguistic world that I felt was very Lucia, that it was somehow an amalgam of so many different languages, or a kind of deconstruction of English into many, many different languages. And I often thought this is probably how Lucia speaks sometimes. She would cross the room and speak English, French, and Triestrian dialect in one breath. And I feel that she was with him in psychically when he was writing Finnegan's Wake.
In 1935, Joyce wrote to Harriet Shaw Weaver,
I am grateful for your letters, but the only ones which enlighten me, even if they are wild, are Lucia's own.
She was very present as a kind of joyful trickster figure within it all, I felt. in a lot of Finnegan's wake, I felt he was speaking for her. For her and to her. So she was kind of dancing around there. Reverend is probably one of the most mischievous pieces I've made. Joyous, one of the most joyous pieces I've made, and mischievous, because probably Lucia was, you know, flying around there, being bold.
I was too naughty. It's stupid how I treat myself.
Definitely, if she was working with me, which I think she was very bold. You know, there were many things. There were constellations that were there. There was Charlie Chaplin was there.
I dressed myself up in Charlie. We had a lot of fun, and I had a great success. We danced, played, sang, and I don't know what else.
Because Lucia used to love dressing up as Charlie Chaplin. It was one of her party things. And Charlie Chaplin somehow made his language, made his way into the piece as well, but through her. I say it's through the family. It's the curse of the family. I think family is the root of a hell of a lot more evils than people give families credit for. There's still an awful lot about her which is shrouded in mystery and in secrecy, or a lot of material that has been willfully destroyed, which I think is a tragedy, really, given that her father was such a key figure in 20th century art. And I think the legacy passed on to his daughter, which never got fulfilled, I think it's really important that we pick up that train.
She was too much for people to handle. But she showed them a new dimension to life.
And I think that that's very much what Lucia was trying to articulate through her dance, but also then through the kind of rebellion which led to her incarceration, probably. It was kind of psychic rebellion against several things that were being imposed on her, I think. You know, kind of traditional ideas that she was resisting, and plus not being given the opportunity to follow her own artistic path, I think. I think she had a really powerful artistic energy pulsing through her, and it really needed to find its form. And I think that I really understand that search for form.
The one that I loved was the sculptor, Sandy Calder, even if he was married with children. He died recently in America. I couldn't marry him.
I think she was probably sexually voracious, actually, which could have been one of the things that was her undoing as well, you know. Where all the energy was going there too, the energy that needed to be expressed artistically. And that probably made life even harder for her, you know.
My friend was Samuel Beckett. I couldn't marry him. Before that, there was Sampa in Locarno.
Robert Nicholson, founder and curator of the James Joyce Tower in Sandy Cove, also paid a visit to Lucia in Northampton in 1980.
I was quite slightly surprised to find a small, slightly kind of dumpy old lady with glasses and slightly kind of frightened expression. And I suppose she still had the squint. The first thing she said to me, actually, was, "Have you a cigarette?" The nurse went out and got some tea, and she immediately just got very confidential and said, "I don't like the nurse." And I asked if she had another one, and she said, "Yes, an Irish nurse." It seemed to be a point in the nurse's favour. And then when the tea came back, the nurse and I kind of fell into conversation, and Lucia went into this sort of reverie and started smiling and patting my leg, which is very kind of cosy of her.
Why not allow dance here? The system created by Margaret Morris is well established across England. There are so many Margaret Morris movement centres all around the country, and the teachers often give classes in hospitals for people with disabilities. Couldn't Lucia benefit enormously from this? To relive and recapture, if not her hopes and dreams, at least the beautiful, privileged moments of her youth. With her body and spirit immersed in dance, her obsessions could be quelled, even for a short time.
I want to go on a trip, to go to Galway. My mother was originally from Galway.
After what clothes her father had worn, she didn't say anything but started patting my leg again. So I asked, do you remember speaking Italian? She said, I speak four languages. I asked, oh, do you speak German then? It seems the logical thing if she'd been in Switzerland. She said, yes, only a few words. Auf Wiedersehen, au revoir. I don't know if au revoir was my prompt, but it was time for me to leave. And then she asked me for a kiss when I left. So. It was the lips, in fact. So
it was lovely.
Yeah, well, striking event. It was. So I said goodbye and kind of backed out the door, and she's kind of gazing after me as I went. So that has passed us over.
I have to marry my cousin George. Here, nobody allows me to be happy, out of jealousy. To get to Galway, I cross the Irish Sea in a luxurious boat. I want to go to a hotel. I want to go to Galway.
In 1938, W.B. Yeats wrote Sweet Dancer for his friend and collaborator, the dancer poet Margot Ruddock, who was also committed to an asylum. It's not hard to imagine Lucia Joyce, whose sad fate Yeats must have been aware of, into it too.
The girl goes dancing there, dancing on the leaf sown, new mown, smooth grass plot of the garden. Escaped from her bitter youth. Escaped out of her crowd, or out of her black cloud. Ah, dancer. Ah, sweet dancer.
I got a couple of letters from Lucia, very short letters, in which she referred to her father as the James Joyce, as if with the pronoun in front of his name, as if he was an institution of some kind, which I suppose he became. And then when she died, I sent over a single white rose. And Jane Lidderdale told me that it was the only flower on her coffin at her funeral.
I think her legacy is inspirational. I think she was a sacrificial victim, though, in so many ways, to become that inspirational. Only because you can see what... I mean, and we can't make assumptions, but if we were to follow the path of her story, insofar as we know it, it seems very clear that that she was committed to these mad places, to being a mad person, because her artistic self was thwarted.
It was extremely interesting and picturesque to watch them sliding along the surface of the water.
Could Lucia Joyce be Ireland's answer to Camille Claudel, an artist who died in obscurity and whose originality and significance came to be appreciated only after her death?
If strange men come from the house to lead her away, do not say that she is happy being crazy. Lead them gently astray. Let her finish her dance. Let her finish her dance. Ah, dancer.
Ah, dancer.
Ah, sweet dancer.
Ah, sweet dancer.
I think it's more the tragedy of what she might have been. That's kind of maybe a beautiful thing to think about.
I feel like she deserves to be recouped and given a more rightful place in the world. She was just a fantastic person, and people who knew her left records of her. They left records that are more vivid than their impressions of James Joyce. And I think we have to see her in the context of her time. That what she achieved was noticed then, and it deserves to be noticed now. We all build on each other's shoulders, and she certainly gave us a foundation for doing that. And we have her to thank for that. She tried.
Did it ever cross your mind, what do you think would happen with a case like that of Lucia today?
I think she'd be popping a pill and dancing with Twyla Tharp or with Merce Cunningham or with Martha Graham. I think she would have found a place to continue dancing. She'd be doing it, and she'd probably be setting up a studio of her own.
Let her finish her dance. Ah, dancer.
Ah, dancer.
Ah, sweet dancer.
Ah, sweet dancer.
Dancing with Lucia was presented and produced by Deirdre Mulrooney. Ivana Lynch was the voice of Lucia. The cast members were Barbara Nicoive, Michael James Ford, Elliot Moriarty and Alwyn Fuere. Dancing with Lucia is a Deirdre Mulrooney production for RTE Lyric FM.